Welcome into the final edition of PFT Live ever. Well, sort of, in its current form. It's been a web show for 4 years now. I can't believe they let me keep doing this for 4 years. As of Monday, I will be able to begin not believing how long they'll let me do it as a three-hour radio show on NBC Sports Radio. But we'll still be right here for the first hour of every program, streaming through NBCSports.com and ProFootballTalk.com. And we're going to do a full hour today because this is kind of like the last run through to do the radio clock and all the other stuff that will be the new reality of this program as of Monday. I guess it means it's the new reality of this program as of today. The new reality for Doug Marrone is he's no longer the coach of the Buffalo Bills. There'd been plenty of speculation as to whether or not the Bills would want to bring Doug Marrone back. That talk quieted down when the Bills beat the Green Bay Packers. Packers have still never won in Buffalo. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, as first reported on NBC's Football Night in America, Doug Marrone had a three-day opt-out clause. All indications were he wasn't going to exercise it. And then out of the blue, right around 6 o'clock Eastern, New Year's Eve, Doug Marrone says sayonara to the Buffalo Bills. And then it became clear why. It wasn't just walk away and take some other job. It's walk away with $4 million fully guaranteed with no offset, meaning he can go somewhere else and make $4 million this year, and if my math is correct, and it rarely is, have $8 million for 2015. Not a bad start to the new year for Doug Marrone. And what amazes me and others is that all of a sudden Doug Marrone has become this hot coaching candidate. Look at his record in Buffalo, 15-17. Now, 3-1 against the Jets, which I guess shouldn't surprise anyone then, that the Jets instantly got in line for Doug Marrone. Woody Johnson, the owner of the team, going on the record Wednesday night with the New York Daily News saying that there's interest in Doug Marrone. Good thing nobody asked Woody Johnson at his Monday press conference about Doug Marrone, or he may have blurted out that the team was interested in Marrone then. Of course, then he was the property of the Bills. Now he's free and clear. He can go anywhere he wants. This is virtually unprecedented, and the question has come up on Twitter and elsewhere, and I think it was Jeff Darlington of NFL Media that raised this, and it's a good point. Why don't people do this more often? Well, maybe they do, and we just don't know about it, because typically owners last a lot longer than coaches. But it was very wise in hindsight for Doug Marrone to insist on this clause to be put in there. I'm told that the Bills ultimately agreed to it because the Browns were hot on the trail of Doug Marrone, and this was necessary in order to get Marrone to go to Buffalo. At the time, Ralph Wilson, 93 years old. And, the chances were that during the 4 years that Marrone was the head coach of the Bills, Ralph Wilson wasn't going to be the owner of the Bills anymore. So there's new ownership, and Marrone's able to go. And, what does this mean for Marrone? Maybe he ends up the coach of the Jets or someone else. Either way, he's going to get $4 million this year. The bigger question is, what does it mean for the Bills? And Did the Bills know about this? Did Terry and Kim Pegula know about it? When you're going to buy a billion-dollar company, you engage in weeks of what the lawyers call due diligence, where you look at all the books, all the paperwork, all the assets, liabilities, everything. Did anybody read that contract? Did the Pegulas know before Sunday night when it was reported on Football Night in America that Marrone has a three-day opt-out, that he's got a three-day opt-out? Because let me tell you, if they knew about it, it needed to be leaked before Sunday night. It needed to come out. There needed to be pressure on Doug Marrone from the locker room, from the fans, from the media. What are you going to do, Doug? What are you going to do, Doug? What are you going to do, Doug? Force him to show his hand. Now, he could have refused to answer, but at least make it a story. Back him into a corner. And I guess you could say, well, they did the honorable thing by not bringing it up at all, but now they don't have a coach. Now they got to pay $4 million to a guy who's walked away. And, yeah, you can say, well, if he doesn't want to be here, we don't want him. But you're paying $4 million to a guy to walk away, and now you don't have a coach. And now on top of it, Bill Polian, whom Terry Pegula was courting to run the football operation. It's so funny. We put that out as a rumor. Everybody acts like there's nothing to it. And then it turns out it was the absolute truth. He was in negotiations, Polian was, with Terry Pegula about a return to the Buffalo Bills and ultimately decided not to do it. Now, as always, there are different versions of reality. We've reported that money caused the thing to blow up. Polian has denied it, just like he denied being possibly returning to the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, the truth is, there's surely an amount of money out there that Terry Pegula could have put on the table to get Bill Polian to decide to leave ESPN and try to help get the Bills out of this mess that they now find themselves in? And where do they go from here? Frank Reich was a name that came up instantly because Bill Polian, if Polian were going to go there, would want Frank Reich. Rex Ryan's name, I noticed on Twitter just before the show began, has bubbled up. The Bills are interested in Rex Ryan. And boy, wouldn't that be something if Rex Ryan ends up with the Bills and Doug Marrone ends up with the Jets? Why not Rex Ryan? They need to do something now to provide a kick to the pants of the franchise. It just all of a sudden is in disarray. And I know that the draft is still months away, free agency's in March, but you've got Senior Bowl coming up, you've got planning. There's just, what are we doing with this front office in Buffalo? What are we doing with the coaching staff? The sooner they figure it out, the better off everyone is going to be. The next thing that needs to be figured out as it relates to the draft is Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston. You know, both guys could go back to college for another year. And going into last night's game, the thinking was both guys would choose to go ahead and enter the draft. And Mariota ahead of Jameis Winston in the perception of the people who ultimately will decide who gets drafted, who doesn't get drafted, and when they get drafted. And it was an opportunity last night, and I frankly believe Jameis Winston was going to have the kind of performance that would have people talking today about Winston over Mariota. Just like 8 years ago, has it been that long? Or was it 7 years ago? It was a long time ago that Vince Young and Texas took down Matt Leinart and USC in the Rose Bowl, and all of a sudden Vince Young jumps over Matt Leinart. Didn't happen last night. That Garo Yepremian moment for Jameis Winston, I think, is going to be on his tombstone. Everything else he accomplished in the past will accomplish in the future. It's that whatever that thing was, the this way, that way, Keystone Cops roll around, turn around, then ball goes flying in the air just as the referee goes flying in the air. That's something that's going to be replayed over and over and over again. And NFL scouts and coaches now have to ask themselves, is this a reflection of how Jameis Winston is going to handle adversity? Is this how he's going to handle a tough moment on a big stage? Now, he had been undefeated, and they had overcome adversity week in and week out. They weren't blowing anybody out. He had developed this reputation as a great second-half quarterback, and that all just evaporated last night. And then the Jimbo Fisher lip-reading exercise with Jameis Winston, that if you don't calm the blank down, you're going to the bench. Another avenue of questions and concerns about Jameis Winston to go along with everything else that was already out there. Now we have this on top of it. What does it mean for Jameis Winston? I'll tell you what it means as a practical matter. It means he should have done what I said he should have done last year, which is say goodbye to college football and not play in 2014. Put the hay in the barn, wait for the draft when he's first eligible, and do not play. It didn't hurt Jadeveon Clowney last year because he still ended up the first overall pick. Sooner or later, a guy who would be one of the top two or three picks is going to realize there is nothing to be gained by playing any additional football for free. And he's going to say, I'm taking the year off, and I'll see you at draft day. And you have to think that Jameis Winston would have been better off to not have that game from last night on his resume. But now it'll be Mariota Winston. Will they both come out? Will one stay in? And here's the thing. If Winston's going to play baseball, he's hell-bent on playing baseball, well, this is the time that you get ready for the draft. This is the time where you pack up, you say, see you later to Tallahassee, and you go to some athletic performance center, and you spend the next 6 weeks there getting ready for the scouting combine, doing everything you need to do, working on your mechanics, working on your throws, running 40 yards in a straight line in your underwear, whatever the case may be, that's what you need to be doing, not getting ready to play baseball. So maybe he's not ready to come to the NFL draft. Maybe we'll see Jameis Winston again next year. Maybe that's the best way for him to be a top five pick, to come back and rehabilitate his image as a football player after what happened last night. And it is amazing on that big stage how the perception of a player can change dramatically, especially when it just felt like there's so many people out there waiting for Jameis Winston to fail, and he had never failed. And he failed last night in a pretty spectacular way. Trying not to fail here in a spectacular way as we do the last web-only edition of PFT Live. When we return, we'll talk to Clifton Brown of CSN Baltimore about the Ravens' trip to Pittsburgh. Torrey Smith complaining about the grass at Heinz Field. Will they be complaining about the outcome of the game? We'll talk to Clifton. MDS, it's the wild card picks coming up later in the program. We'll talk to you as well, PFT Planet segment. We're going to fill up a full hour here today on PFT Live. We'll keep it rolling after the break. See you in a couple minutes. The normal radio clock has long breaks. We could show you the same ads over and over again, or I could come back and talk about something that you may or may not want to hear about. Let's talk about Rex Ryan. I mentioned him earlier as a name that has emerged in Buffalo as they scramble to find a new head coach, and that would be a fascinating outcome. Although, I don't know how attractive that job is for Rex Ryan because there really isn't a good quarterback there. You'd be swapping Geno Smith for E.J. Manuel. At least, that's who they have now. Atlanta seems to be the place that Rex should want to go. Matt Ryan at quarterback, Julio Jones at receiver, a team that feels like it's close to turning it around, a team that's in a division where it's easier to get to the top. Don't have to deal with Bill Belichick anymore. Wouldn't have to deal with his Jets, although he'd probably like to deal with his Jets. I thought the Dolphins should have hired Rex Ryan. No disrespect to Joe Philbin after I've insulted him by suggesting he should have been fired and replaced with Rex Ryan. But that would be something. Rex Ryan in the division. He'd be tempted, but ultimately, you got to look at the personnel, you got to look at the situation, and you got to make a decision. And if he has a choice between Buffalo and Atlanta, you take Atlanta. The question is, if the choice comes down to Buffalo versus ESPN, what do you do? Some people think that he's using the NFL interest to get a better deal out of ESPN. That's a weird angle to all of this. Usually, it's you try to leverage other options to get the best possible football deal. Some people think that Rex Ryan is actually trying to get a better deal out of ESPN by talking to the Falcons, the 49ers, and now potentially and eventually the Buffalo Bills. But you know that Rex Ryan's going to be back at some point. And that's the other question I have. Will he be as good as he could be as an analyst if he knows he's going to be back coaching? John Gruden has never been as good as an analyst as he could have been because he knows he's going to be back coaching at some point. He doesn't want to burn bridges. If Rex Ryan cares about that, I don't know that he can help himself. That's the beauty of Rex Ryan. He says what he thinks whenever he wants, however he wants. We'll say some more things with Clifton Brown of CSM Baltimore. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is PFT Live. The Baltimore Ravens are back in the postseason. That's 6 out of 7 times under Coach John Harbaugh. The only time they missed it, 2013, the year after they won the Super Bowl. They'll head to Pittsburgh Saturday night on NBC to take on the Steelers, one of the greatest rivalries in the NFL. Gets a third round for 2014, actually 2015. Joining us now, our first guest of 2015, Clifton Brown of CSN Baltimore. Clifton, Happy New Year. Welcome to the program. And how surprised are you that the Ravens ultimately made it to the postseason?
A little bit with the way they got in, after they lost in Houston in week 16 and lost control of their destiny, I figured that, they might be in trouble. But, they looked really bad for a lot of the game against the Browns, but managed to pull it out. And then obviously got the help they needed from the Chiefs beating the Chargers to get in. So, yeah, I think the Ravens winning 10 games, now that they are in the playoffs, I think they actually might feel a little relieved and a little bit of the pressure is off them. I think they were pressing a little bit in December, particularly offensively. Now that they're in, I think they may loosen up and play some of their best football, which they have done in the playoffs in the recent past.
And they're going to need to play some of their best football to go into Pittsburgh and win. Ravens won way back in week 2 at Baltimore. Steelers won fairly handily when the Ravens went to Pittsburgh. This time around, there's a big question about the availability of Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, and I tend to think that that obscures a bigger problem. Antonio Brown has had his best year ever against the Ravens. Ben Roethlisberger was great the last time they played. How do the Ravens plan to slow down the Steelers' passing game, regardless of whether or not Bell suits up?
Yeah, that's a $1 million question this game, Mike. Bell only had 20 yards the last time they played, yet Roethlisberger had 6 touchdown passes. And the Steelers won by 20 points. So that's the big issue. Can this Ravens secondary stop Ben Roethlisberger and those receivers? The Ravens feel that secondary is better since that game in November. Ladarius Webb, who's been plagued by a lot of injuries, is playing his best football right now at one corner. Rashawn Melvin, who became a starter in December, the other corner, has played pretty well so far. And, you know, guys like Jeremy Miles and Will Hill at safety are getting more playing time now than Matt Elam, who was a first-round draft pick last year. But I don't think the Ravens are going to be able to slow down Roethlisberger unless they get a pass rush led by Dumerville and Suggs. You know, if Roethlisberger has time to throw with those receivers, he's going to hurt the Ravens. So that's the key to me. Can the Ravens get enough of a pass rush on Roethlisberger, and can their offense hold the ball enough to keep Roethlisberger off the field?
Haloti Ngata is back after a four-game suspension for Adderall use. How does his presence help the rest of the defense get their job done?
Well, he certainly is good that he's back for the Ravens because it looks like Timmy Jernigan, their rookie defensive tackle, is not going to play. So Brandon Williams, their other defensive tackle, had a really good year. Ngata came back in shape despite missing 4 weeks. I think he'll want to have something to prove. He said he feels like he owes his teammates for missing the last four games. So I think Ngata is going to play like Ngata, which will help. I do believe the Ravens, their front seven is very tough to run on them, has been all season, and I suspect that won't be any different tomorrow night. However, again, I think the pass rush is going to be much more important for the Ravens than their ability to stop the run. They're going to have to throw Roethlisberger off his rhythm, make him throw before he wants to, even though he's difficult to sack. And then, yeah, I think offensively, that's going to be a big key for the Ravens. They've been a little sluggish offensively, up and down the last four games. They have to move the football, score points, I think, consistently if they're going to win this game.
A couple of keys to the offense are receivers Steve Smith and Torrey Smith. Steve getting up there on the calendar, and Torrey Smith in the final game potentially of his rookie contract if the Ravens should lose, regardless of how far the Ravens take this. Do we expect that maybe both guys could be gone next year?
I think it's possible, Mike, but I think that it's more likely that at least one, if not two, will be back. I think the Ravens are going to want Torrey Smith back, and he wants to stay. But, you know, Ozzie Newsom's going to set a price for Torrey that he's comfortable paying. And if Torrey goes out and finds a lot more money elsewhere, he'll have a decision to make. I think it's more likely with Torrey Smith that instead of, you know, getting a big contract to be somebody's number one, you know, there may be a contender that feels like he'd be perfect as a number two, you know, a guy who can complement what they already have. And if he has a chance to go to a winning team with a good quarterback, he may have a decision to make. But, you know, Steve Smith, he's had another 1,000-yard season. He's tailed off a little bit in the second half of the season. But I think these playoffs will just see Steve Smith type of party, a rivalry game, intensity. I think Smith will be really pumped up. Steve, that is, tomorrow night. And it wouldn't be surprising if he does well. So, yeah, they need to get both Smiths going in this game to move further. And then, yeah, I think at least one, if not both of them, probably will be back with the Ravens next year.
Speaking of good quarterbacks, the jury remains out on how good Joe Flacco really is. He's in the second year of that $120 million contract. The way the cap numbers work, a decision's going to have to be made after 2015. How much of what happens this January is going to factor into how much the Ravens will be willing to pay Flacco going forward once those cap numbers get to the point where a restructuring becomes critical?
Yeah, Mike, I don't think there's any question. You know, that contract, the Ravens are going to want to look at it again. But I also don't think there'll be any question if Flacco has two Super Bowl rings or has another strong playoff run this year, that he'll have more leverage, you know, to keep those numbers kind of where he wants them to be. So, yeah, I mean, Flacco's career so far has been, you know, not as consistent as you would like him to be, but certainly he's been clutch. He played his best football, everybody knows, during that Super Bowl run in 2012. He's had a lot of fourth quarters where he's played well and led comeback victories. So, you know, much like he's compared a lot to Eli Manning, and I think there are a lot of similarities. He hasn't been as mistake and turnover prone as Eli, but certainly been a guy that, you know, weeks 1 through 17, sometimes you don't know what you're going to get, but in big moments has risen to the occasion. So Flacco knows what's at stake, not only personally, but you know, he got a taste of winning a Super Bowl and really was disappointed last year when the Ravens did not make the playoffs. And he's at the point in his career now where he feels like every year it's kind of Super Bowl or bust for him. He knows what it's like to be a champion, and he wants to go back.
Assistant General Manager Eric DaCosta once again sticking with the Ravens despite interest elsewhere in promoting him. Gary Kubiak, offensive coordinator, former Texans head coach, not interested in interviewing while the Ravens are still playing. What do you think happens with Kubiak after the dust settles on the season?
I think Kubiak will be interested in talking once the season, once the Ravens season ends, whenever that is. But at, by that time, if it's not after Sunday, I don't know if he's a favorite for any of the jobs that he's being talked about. He's certainly a guy who I think, you know, has done a good job as an offensive coordinator this year for the Ravens. I think that he is happy in this role. I don't think he's just, you know, blowing smoke when he says that. It's hard for any coach. I'm sure he would love to have another chance to be a head coach, but I don't think he's obsessed with that right now. I think that he's willing, you know, if it costs him a job, a head coaching job next year, to not talk until the Ravens season is over, I think he's fine with that. So I think the odds are against Gary Kubiak being a head coach somewhere else next year. But, you know, if the Ravens have a playoff run, and certainly, you know, if he is back next year and does a good job again as offensive coordinator, I certainly believe that it's possible Gary Kubiak could get another head coaching opportunity down the road.
Clifton, great stuff as always. Thanks for your time. Enjoy Pittsburgh. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Mike. Thanks for having me.
It's Clifton Brown of CSN Baltimore. When we come back, guess what? MDS gets a chance to set the clock to 0-0. We'll do the picks, playoff edition. We get started with the wild card round after the break. This is PFT Live. I really don't know how often we're going to be doing these little filler segments once we debut PFT Live, the radio show, on Monday. Hour one simulcast right here on NBCSports.com. Longer radio breaks, so you get to hear a little extra content. And I don't know how much planning I'm going to put into it. A lot of it's going to come from whatever pops into my head, good, bad, or otherwise, during the prior segment. And one thing I thought of, John Harbaugh, actually working on a weird sort of coaching tree. Rex Ryan was a John Harbaugh assistant for a year, even though Ryan was in Baltimore before Harbaugh. Ryan was passed over for the Ravens head coaching job in favor of John Harbaugh back in 2008. Jim Caldwell came to Baltimore for a couple of years before going to Detroit. Now Gary Kubiak. Maybe this is the place where fired coaches, forget about the Fired Football Coaches Association founded by John Gruden, go work for John Harbaugh and then you're a head coach again, because it looks like there's going to be interest in Kubiak. Depends on whether or not the Ravens wrap up their season soon enough for Kubiak to land somewhere. But you know, you look at Harbaugh. He's finished his seventh season now. Well, it's not over yet. He's in his seventh season. Could last another month, 30 days to be precise. And he's Jim Harbaugh's brother. And I tend to think there are some real similarities between the two as it relates to intensity, as it relates to will, desire, the kinds of things that maybe alienated Jim Harbaugh with the 49ers front office. What is it about the Ravens that has allowed John Harbaugh to thrive? Could it be that the Ravens understand that when you have a great coach, you do what you do to keep your great coach? You do what you do to work around your great coach? Could it be that GM Ozzie Newsome understands that sometimes feathers are going to be ruffled, but it makes sense to keep a great coach when you find a great coach? I think that there's more than meets the eye to this whole Jim versus John Harbaugh thing. We'll meet MDS eye to eye, sort of, right after this. Oh, it's PFT Picks Time Playoff Edition, and before we look at the picks for the first weekend of the playoffs, I have to remind MDS that for the 256 regular season games, I did, unlike last year, emerge victorious with a five-game margin, 66.4%, I believe, but who's counting? MDS got 64.4% of the games correct, but again, who's counting? I only count when I win. When I lose, I just say screw it and move on. And I could lose in this 11-game showdown. It was my idea a couple of years ago to break it out separately and reset the clock to zero because I was losing. Now maybe I'd like to do it the other way, but we're not going to. We're going to stick with the rules. So we start all over, and we start with the postseason edition, and let's get started with the first game of the weekend. Arizona Cardinals travel to Carolina to take on the Panthers. MDS, first of all, Happy New Year. Welcome back to the program. Second of all, who do you like in this game, i.e., who are you going to be wrong about this time?
Well, thank you very much for that warm introduction. Happy New Year to you as well. I've got two words for you. Ryan Lindley. I cannot in good conscience come on here and tell you that a Ryan Lindley-led team is going to win a playoff game. Now, he actually played okay in Week 17 for the Cardinals. He played better than I thought he was capable of playing in Week 17 for the Cardinals. But I simply cannot see Ryan Lindley doing much of anything against a Carolina defense that has steadily improved over the course of the season. I thought early this year that Carolina defense was a mess. I think as the season has worn on, they've gotten a lot better, played closer to the kind of defense they were last year when they were one of the best defenses in football. I simply cannot see the Cardinals scoring many points. I like the Panthers at home to make a bit of a statement, maybe even win comfortably and say, yes, we got into the playoffs with a losing record, but now that we're in the playoffs, we're going to be a tough team to beat.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the Panthers do not have a very stellar recent history of home playoff performances, including 6 years ago when they lost soundly as the number two seed in 2008 when Larry Fitzgerald and company came to town. And really, there aren't many guys left on that Cardinals team other than Larry Fitzgerald, probably not many Panthers left either since that game 6 years ago when Jake Delhomme's career went into the commode. But here's what made me choose the Cardinals. First of all, Ryan Lindley has not been horrible. Second of all, that Seahawks game, final score 35-6, wasn't as big of a blowout because it all went downhill and just went out of control. It was a competitive game for a while. It was 14-3 at one point, and Lindley had a snap in shotgun formation that he dropped, and they couldn't convert, and they kicked a field goal, and then it all went to hell after that. I think Lindley can do enough with the rest of that team, and I think the Panthers' winning streak has masked the fact that they haven't played anybody. The Falcons are horrible. The Browns are horrible. The Buccaneers are horrible, and the Saints, unexpectedly, are horrible. And yes, impressive road wins at New Orleans and at Atlanta, but who better to win on the road than a team that's in the division? You play there every year. You're not intimidated by going to New Orleans or Atlanta. It's not as big of a challenge for teams that never go to those buildings. So I don't want to say it was a fluke that the Panthers finished strong because, look, to their credit, they finished strong. They won four in a row. They got a playoff berth. But you got to pick one team or the other. And I also think Bruce Arians has become a master at using this perception. Everybody's picking against the Cardinals. And it's one thing to use that against a team like the Seahawks. It's quite another to use it against a team like the Panthers. I think the Cardinals can get it together, and I think they can win, and I think they will win. We also disagree on the Saturday night game on NBC. Ravens at Steelers, round three. I'll give you the first word.
Yeah, this is one of the great rivalries, I think, in the NFL right now. I really always enjoy these Ravens-Steelers games. And this is a competitive enough, close enough game that I think one player can make the difference. And in this case, it's a player who has a big question mark, and that player is Le'Veon Bell. I don't know if he's going to play or not. I suspect if he is going to play, it'll be less than 100%. And I think that makes all the difference. Le'Veon Bell has been an extraordinary player for them this year. You know, 2,200 yards from scrimmage without ever fumbling, that is a very hard thing to do. In fact, it's never happened in NFL history before to have that many yards and never have a fumble all season. You cannot replace a player like that, and especially the Steelers, who, after they cut LeGarrette Blount, and in fact, even before they cut LeGarrette Blount, had already decided Le'Veon Bell is our workhorse. He is our running back. We have no other running back. They're going to pay for that, I think. They're going to struggle to run the ball. It looks like maybe the weather forecast in Pittsburgh is going to make it a little bit hard to throw the ball as well. That's good news for the Ravens, because if there's a way to beat Baltimore, it's to test that injury-plagued secondary. Overall, I think the Ravens, in a close, hard-fought game, are going to find a way to win this one and to end the Steelers' season in Pittsburgh.
Clifton Brown of CSN Baltimore provided me with a stat that I was not aware of. The last time the Steelers and the Ravens played, Le'Veon Bell only had 20 yards. This isn't about Le'Veon Bell or Josh Harris or an offensive line, which under Mike Munchak has done much better when it comes to opening running lanes. This is about Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Brown did not have great numbers in his first four seasons against the Ravens. This year, 18 catches, 234 yards, and a touchdown. I don't think they can stop Antonio Brown. I don't think they can slow down Ben Roethlisberger. And to me, this whole Le'Veon Bell thing, I think that's why the Steelers have just been kind of nonchalant about it. And maybe he's healthy enough to play, but they're thinking, we're going to save him for the divisional round because we can beat the Ravens without Le'Veon Bell. We can take this team down at home without one of the best players in the NFL. That speaks to a level of confidence that the Steelers deservedly have after what's happened the past few weeks, as they have finally found the gas pedal and they hope to carry it all the way through January. On to Sunday, where unfortunately we don't disagree, so it won't be as much fun. But early game, Cincy at Indy, go.
I really look back at that Week 7 game when the Colts just dominated the Bengals, won 27-0. And I have to say, I just don't see how these two teams are all that much different now than they were then. I'm not saying the game's going to go exactly the same way as that game did, but the Colts were a clearly superior team during the regular season when they met head-to-head, and I have to think it's going to go the same way in Indianapolis this time around. I really like the Colts to win, and I like the Colts to win pretty convincingly. I have a feeling this is going to be the most lopsided game of the entire weekend.
Yeah, and the only thing that gives me pause, MDS, is that it really feels like the Colts have settled in as the best team in the NFL's second tier, and they can't compete with the best teams the AFC has to offer. And they're going to win this game and then go on the road and lose to the Broncos or lose to the Patriots. You just feel like there's a ceiling over the franchise, and that may be why they had a hard time selling out all of the tickets. They announced the sellout Thursday at 1 o'clock, right at the 72-hour mark. So I like the Colts. But who knows what they'll do beyond that, and who knows how that will affect them. All right, this radio clock is forcing me to move things along more quickly than I would like. Lions, Cowboys to wrap the day. You hate the Lions. Do you like them on Sunday?
I don't think the Lions have quite enough. I think that Ndamukong Suh winning his appeal is nice for the Lions. The fact that Nick Fairley might be able to go is nice for the Lions. I think losing Henry Melton is a bigger deal to the Cowboys than people realize. I know Henry Melton hasn't gotten a lot of playing time, especially late in the season, but an interior pass rush in Matthew Stafford's face is one of those things that could maybe be a problem for the Lions offense, and that's not going to be there without Henry Melton. And yet, I just don't see, when I look at a quarterback matchup like Matthew Stafford versus Tony Romo, I don't see the Lions winning that one. I think Tony Romo's going to have a very good game against a pretty good Lions defense, and I think the Cowboys are going to put up, you know, maybe four touchdowns through the air. Des Bryant will probably have a big game. I think the Cowboys score too much and beat the Lions in a game where the Lions will probably be competitive but fade in the fourth quarter.
Well, I hope you're right Sunday. I hope you're wrong Saturday. We'll see how it all plays out. We'll talk again next week. Enjoy the games, and sorry that the regular season worked out the way it did.
Yeah. Well, I'll do better in the playoffs. I always do.
All right. Well, see you. There he is, MDS. When we come back, it's time to talk to you. Pick up your cell phone device quickly, 888-237-5269. We will answer the questions we have via the Twitter. 888-237-5269. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Welcome back to the final little mini, whatever this is, segment of PFT Live on the web as we practice our radio clock skills because they become reality on Monday. The AP All-Pro team is a reality, and we complain about this every year. So let's go ahead and complain about it now. Some of the voters just don't understand what positions players play. Somebody voted for Marshawn Lynch as a fullback. And I can understand, look, you want to get him in there some way. Maybe it's a protest vote against the whole idea that there's even a fullback on there because the fullback position is dead. Is John Kuhn more worthy than Marshawn Lynch of being a first-team All-Pro? So I guess I see it, but still, he's not a fullback. J.J. Watt's a first-team defensive end and a second-team defensive tackle. Five people voted for him for a defensive tackle, which doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. We've seen it before with Justin Smith of the 49ers. And you know, part of it is the AP doesn't give any guidance for these awards. None. The rules are there ain't no rules, and you just have to figure it out. The other part of the problem is there's only 50 voters. There isn't first, second, third place. It's winner take all. They do it with all the awards that way, and it just creates some odd stuff. DeAndre Levy, I think, has some inside and outside linebacker votes. That's probably happened at some other positions as well. We're going to, because I know this is delicate territory because it looks like we're whining because no one from PFT has an AP vote, setting aside whether or not we should. I just think the process isn't as good as it needs to be. So much weight is put into these. Oh, Associated Press All-Pro. When you start scratching the surface and looking at it, it's like, Should some of these people really be voting? Especially people who only cover one team. No disrespect intended, but you're only covering one team. You're not covering 32 teams. How do you know who the best players are league-wide if you're only covering one team? So I'm sure I'm going to get myself in trouble by whining about it. I'll stop whining about it. When we come back, you can whine to me. It's PFT Planet Time. We'll be right back. This is the last time that I'll be saying we're wrapping up the show with this because as of Monday, it'll simply be wrapping up hour number one. PFT Planet Time, first question comes via the Twitter, courtesy of BR3ZT. What do you think the new ownership of the Bills will bring? Not to say it's a cursed franchise, but Doug Marone leaving with money is nuts. Well, here's the problem. That's a commitment that was made by the prior ownership in order to get Marone. It was Marone to the Browns or the Bills. They needed to give him that $4 million cash and carry clause upon change of ownership in order to get the deal done. And the only fault the Pegulas have in this is maybe not knowing about it. It's possible they didn't until recently, and also not doing whatever they had to do to keep Marone around. Maybe Marone wanted too much. Bottom line is Marone is now gone, and the Bills are scrambling to find a coach, especially after Bill Polian said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not coming out of retirement. I'm not leaving ESPN. And now they're stuck, and who knows how it'll all play out. Jesse in New York, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man.
I got a question. So after Jameis Winston's performance last night, do you think it's dropped him down low enough to where the Cowboys can potentially pick him up in the first round so that they don't go through the woes that they had after Troy Aikman retired?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I hadn't thought about that. I think that Winston potentially will slide down the draft board, especially as he's scrutinized more carefully. And if he decides he's not going to go through the normal pre-draft workup and go play baseball. And, hey, if you want to draft me, you draft me. If you don't, you don't. What if he just says, I'm not coming to the combine? I'm eligible for the draft. I'm entering the draft. And you draft me where you want to draft me. I'm not going to submit to any of this stuff. That may be his best play. But he could be on the board whenever the Cowboys pick, even if they're all the way down at number 32, which still would be unlikely, but it wouldn't shock me based on what we've seen so far this year. But and then the question becomes, is now the time to draft the next guy? Last year wasn't the time with Johnny Manziel. Do you get a guy who can help the 2015 Cowboys, or do you get a guy who's going to help the 2016 or 2017 or 2018 Cowboys? Could be another dilemma for Jerry Jones to resolve. But thank you for the call. Back to the Twitter at I don't know what this is. Streel your face. Who knows what this is? What is the cause of the supposed rift between Chip Kelly and Howie Roseman? Does Kelly make personnel decisions or Roseman? Well, Chip Kelly has final say over the roster, and he said so at one point this year when there was talk about whether or not Nick Foles is the guy who's the quarterback. Chip Kelly negotiated final say over the roster when he was hired 2 years ago, and I recall vividly the Eagles didn't want to admit that because I think they didn't want to say not only are we hiring a guy as head coach who has had no prior connection to the NFL, we're also going to give him final say over the roster. There's a sense that there's dysfunction in Philadelphia. There's a sense that we're now setting up another Trent Baalke versus Jim Harbaugh situation that will hover over the 2015 season. Will Chip Kelly want to leave? Will he want to stay? Will he try to get Howie Roseman run out the door? The departure of VP of Player Personnel Tom Gamble is viewed in most league circles as a sign that Howie Roseman is winning, that Howie Roseman has the ear of owner Jeffrey Lurie, and that if Lurie has to choose between Roseman and Kelly, Lurie very well may choose Kelly. But there's contractual issues that come into play. It's not like Chip Kelly can just walk in and say, hey, I want to go coach another NFL team. They need to find a way to work this out. And that's the key. For the same reason the 49ers needed to find a way to work it out with Jim Harbaugh, the Eagles have a good coach. They need to find a way to work it out. Let's go to the phone lines. Kyle in Atlanta, you're on PFT Live. Hey, Kyle.
Well, my question for today was, the Vikings, obviously, we didn't make the playoffs this year. Pretty good season overall, going in the right direction. But with Adrian Peterson not playing this year and our running backs all kind of stepping up to the challenge and playing pretty well, how do you think they'll handle that going forward?
Well, thank you for the call. And that's going to be one of the big questions of the offseason. Will the Vikings want to move on from Adrian Peterson? Will Peterson want to move on from the Vikings? He's already made some noise that maybe he does. And will the Vikings let him go? Will they say, hey, you're under contract with us. You either play for us or you play for no one. Do they try to trade him? And the other problem is, as of right now, he's not even eligible for reinstatement until April 15. That's a month into the official start of the league year. That means a month will go by where trade options could be available. There's a pending lawsuit. Who knows what Adrian Peterson wants to do? Who knows whether or not he's going to be able to do it? Who knows what the Vikings want to do? But I do know this. If Adrian Peterson had been available for even half of the season, the Vikings are a playoff team. And how can the NFL not recognize the competitive issues that will necessarily be part of this new horizon of putting guys on paid leave when they're merely accused of crimes and then delaying their return, as the NFL clearly did after Adrian Peterson worked out a deal in Texas to resolve the charges against him. And meanwhile, Greg Hardy should be playing for the Panthers on Saturday. He's not, and nobody seems to really be troubled by that. Another question from Twitter as we wrap this thing up, at Sean Ringrose, with the talk of the Texans possibly promoting, air quotes, Rick Smith, who might be potential targets for a new GM. Well, you know what? If Rick Smith is promoted, and I know there's reports from the very respected and friend of the program, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, disputing the idea that Smith will be transitioned away from the football operation. If that happens, that means Bill O'Brien, the first-year head coach, has done well enough to win some power, and that Bill O'Brien would in turn want someone that he's comfortable with to set the table. I don't think it was a coincidence that right about the time those reports came out, there was a big deal made about Nick Caserio's promotion, not promotion, but extension with the Patriots. And I know how it was reported, oh, he can't leave. Well, he can leave if he gets final say over personnel. That probably won't happen in Houston. If Bill O'Brien wins this thing, if there is a thing with Rick Smith, then I think Bill O'Brien ends up the top guy in Houston. But it's always those past connections that you look to when, because you got to be comfortable with it, you got to have a friendship, you got to have a good working relationship, because there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of stress, and if you don't have a good relationship to start with, you can have fractures like we've seen in San Francisco and now Philadelphia. A real quick phone call from Ron in New York as we wrap this thing up. What's up, Ron?
Hey, I wanted to see if you've heard any information on Julian Edelman's availability, if he's cleared the concussion protocol. I know he was back for the press portion of practice earlier this week, but is he going to be ready to play?
Well, thank you for the call. And, you know, that's a question that is completely out of the hands of the team. It falls under the purview of the independent neurologist. The Bengals are dealing with this with A.J. Green. He didn't practice today. First, you got to get clearance to practice. Does it mean that if the guy's at the press availability of practice, he's gotten clearance to practice? Maybe. But ultimately, you've got to get clearance to play in the game. And the Patriots, while not critically in need of Julian Edelman, they will need him if they want to get the most out of that offense, as they prepare next Saturday afternoon on NBC to play either. Who would they be playing? They would be playing the Ravens, the Bengals, or the Colts. And I've said this all along, the one team they don't want to see is the Baltimore Ravens, because the Ravens could go up there and beat them. We'll see you next week when this is a new radio show. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.